You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
Look at the Alouettes Flight Deck. Podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football, presented by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. Hey, how are you?
Oh, doing good, Tim. I'm doing great.
Saw you a couple days ago. Saw you twice in 1 week. People are going to start to talk. They're going to think that we're podcast hosts or something.
I know. It's like, no. I swear, it's just a bromance. It's all good.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. I like that. As long as your girlfriend knows that, and my wife knows that too. So,
No.
We weren't holding hands. We were praying that the field goal would go through.
Yes.
So, as we mentioned last week, and we've been sort of teasing that this is the first ever episode that is officially sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I guess our second. But this is the very first episode where we are going to be doing, as we're talking about the Alouettes, podcast tasting of our sponsor Bad Monkey Popcorn.
Yes, I believe this is the first time in recorded history anyways that someone actually does it's a live tasting, but first time that someone's doing an in podcast tasting of popcorn on a podcast,
as far as we know.
So we're trailblazers.
A sports podcast, let's put it that way, because I'm sure there are many others, foodie podcasts, that may do it and chew gum with their mouth open while they're talking and stuff like that. So
you're absolutely right. This will be the first sports podcast where there will be an in-house tasting of
popcorn.
Now, I
don't know if the guys over at Tune Out, did they ever drink the Bomb Energy drink while they were taping the show?
Well, they can get pretty cranked up sometimes, and I know Bomb Energy sort of gives you that little jolt there. So I'd be disappointed if they didn't do that.
Yeah. So first of all, what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to do at the beginning of every show, then we will be starting to talk about Alouettes football, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We have six flavors that were provided to each of us by the good people over at Bad Monkey Popcorn in Saint-Laurent, Quebec. They are Caramel, Le Québécois, Baby Girl, Chocolate, Twister, and Bad Girl. And we are going to do this the most scientific way possible in choosing which flavor we're going to have this week. And it just happens to be a spinny wheel on my phone.
Oh. It's kind of how they choose the Pope now, isn't it?
Yeah. Could be worse. It could be that the fans pick the plays, which I know is done. Which I know is done in a particular, by a particular league, by some particular fans. But it's not us. And from there, as I said, we will chow down, and we want your feedback specifically on how this is done, because we know it's really rude to chew, to eat while you're talking, but it's the same as drinking. You just can't hear somebody drink, right?
Exactly. So, and again, since we're breaking new ground here, I mean, we'll see if this works or not. I mean, this at the end of the day, folks, get yourself some Bad Monkey Popcorn. We're gonna let you know which flavors are the best. I mean, I think all six are gonna be fantastic. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So, I mean, like, I'm personally excited to see how this goes. And again, folks, I'll remind you all that Bad Monkey Popcorn can be purchased at fine retailers throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And also, Alouettes fans, don't forget, every single home game, there is a Bad Monkey Popcorn kiosk there. So if you want to get your fix and you can't make it to the grocery store because you're late for the football game, guess what? The Alouettes and Bad Monkey Popcorn have you covered.
Yep. So we're in the North stands, and for those of you across Canada who want to have it, you can get it by heading over to Bed Bath & Beyond if you happen to have one in your local area. You can always head over to the Bad Monkey website at Bad Monkey Popcorn and check out and just plug in your city. So here we go. It is all the flavors on this wheel times two, and let's give this wheel a whirl. So high tech.
What a time to be alive.
today's flavor, or this week's flavor, is Baby Girl.
Oh, Baby Girl.
Oh, that's funny. That's one of the ones I haven't tried.
Well, then today's your lucky day now, Tim.
Over here. I'm going to grab it. Don't run with the scissors. What have I told you, Cliff? Don't run with scissors in your hand.
Don't tell me how to live.
No, well, you know. Okay. So is this sort of like when you're coloring? Are you allowed to cut outside of the dotted line?
I think it's encouraged, quite frankly. All right.
Okay. So people know another.
It smells amazing, by the way.
They also are calling this Cerise or Pink Cherry. And so this is one I haven't tried before.
All right, me neither. So we're both going in. We're both going into this.
Oh, that does smell good. But it really does smell good. Okay. There we go. And yes, this is the time. This is the part of the program where we actually do. Do encourage eating with your mouth open.
Oh, wow. I gotta say, this is really nice. I do enjoy cherries, so that's a big plus right there.
That's not bad. I know how some people hate, you know, the fake flavor of cherry. You know, oh, that's good. Spit on the mic, Capper. You know, they hate the taste of fake cherry, and it reminds some people of the old cough syrup that they had. But this isn't bad. This isn't bad.
Almost has a bit of like a candy corn, or not candy corn, a cotton candy kind of flavor to it.
Not only is it peanut free, but it's also kosher.
Oh, there you go. I mean, folks, what more do we have to do? I'm telling you right now, this is the snack. I mean, I know they sell regular popcorn at Percival Molson Stadium, and that's all well and good. But I'm telling you right now, if you really want to expand your horizons and go beyond the norm of popcorn, I'm telling you right now, you've got to get yourself some Bad Monkey popcorn, because this Baby Girl popcorn is absolutely fantastic.
This isn't bad. I was very skeptical. Okay, and I know we're not a review show, but if you were to rate this one to four footballs, got to stay with the sports.
Oh yeah, we got a theme here.
1 to 4 footballs. Where would you rate it?
I'm going to give this a solid 3.5 footballs.
Okay.
It's a little sweet. I know not everybody.
It's not too sweet.
When they want to,
it's not that. Yeah, not that bad though.
No, like it's just that little hint of sweetness. I mean, it's not cloyingly sweet like which a lot of people would expect from like a sort of a candied popcorn. But this is, like I said, really, really well done.
I would go, considering that this is first of the six. I'll give it a solid. I'll give it 3 footballs. As he reaches for the popcorn again.
Absolutely outstanding. And give them a follow on Twitter, folks, at Bad Monkey Inc., or hit them up on Facebook at Bad Monkey Popcorn.
Yep.
Absolutely fantastic stuff.
Al's this week seems to be Boris Bede is getting a workout. He's impressed us quite a bit this year, basically because he seems to be doing all the scoring.
Uh-huh. And you know what? It's not he's not only impressing us; he's impressing everybody who's been watching the CFL this season.
Yeah.
Any sort of memories that the folks have had of last season are gone. Any sort of mental block that he had in his head, gone. He is back to his 2015 form. He had an absolutely outstanding rookie campaign to start off his career in the CFL. Kind of faltered last year. You know, had some things going on. And just was unable to just get into his groove. But I'm telling you right now, 2017, he has been one of the highlights for the Montreal Alouettes. He's only missed once, and it's only because the first ever field goal attempt that he made kind of bounced off the – or not, was it a field goal attempt or the point after attempt, sorry?
No, he hasn't missed a point after attempt. It was a field goal, and I thought it was wide.
Right, but it turned out it actually hit the
– Oh, that's hilarious. That's funny. Wide, right. Sorry.
But since then – he's been money. He's been absolutely fantastic this season so far. That one little hiccup, he's recovered from it and has just been absolutely outstanding in 2017 for Montreal. It's definitely one of the bright spots so far because, unfortunately, I know it's only three games in, but it's been some tough sledding for the Montreal Alouettes.
Yeah, they haven't yet to score 20 points this year in the regular season. The defense is keeping them in the games, but the defense this past week kind of was the reason why they gave up the winning touchdown. Obviously, I think the defense this week with the loss to BC, Jonathan Mincy was missed badly. He really was, and I think it actually showed that he is now an integral part of the defense just based on how badly the Alouettes replaced the replacement DB was getting burned.
It was tough. We had Donald Duamba Jr. starting his first CFL game, and again, definitely a lot of potential there. There's definitely a lot to like. I think he's got some of the tools that, in time, he can definitely be a potential player, a full time for the Alouettes. But yeah, I mean, this was definitely some tough sledding for him to go in this game against BC. What was interesting to me though was seeing Ryan Phillips, a former BC Lion, out on the field as well, out in the secondary.
Yeah.
And man, I tell you, like I kind of cringed a little bit last week versus Edmonton because it looked like he still had some rust on him, but I'd say pretty much he's shaking it off now. Now he looks like the player that we expected him to be when he signed with Montreal in the offseason. So I'm very excited to see how much further along he can go in sort of reinventing himself because, again, for years he was Mr. BC Lion, among many others. So now to see him in Alouette's colors is a little jarring, and I'm pretty sure it was even a little jarring for him to be lining up against so many of his former teammates last week in Montreal. But now Ryan Phillips, he's our guy now. He's now officially a Montreal Alouette and looked very solid against his former teammates. Anyone who thought that he was going to take it easy on them was definitely disappointed. And I'm anxious to see what he can do now. Being that veteran presence for the young secondary is going to be absolutely tremendous. I'm curious to see where this is going to go, and I'm of the opinion that things can only get better from this point on.
Yeah, but I think just for that, it's still a matter of the Alouettes needing to try to score. I mean, as I said, the defense is holding the team in this. It's just a matter of what needs to be done. I mean, we heard, and we'll talk about it a little bit more too, because the Alouettes held their season ticket holder get together this past weekend. And there's some interesting things said by not only Kavis Reid but also Coach Chapdelain. I think there are maybe a few fans out there that are harking back to last year and how this team is not able to score and they're having so many troubles scoring. I understand it's a marathon, not a sprint. I get that, but in this type of case, it can get very frustrating, even for myself as being the veteran fan that I am. And true, we're all used to the team winning, and you're going to have a team where it's a downtime for the team. But it's a matter of what can the team do? What do you see, Cliff, that the team has been doing wrong, and what specifically needs to be improved the most? Besides just saying scoring needs to be fixed, but that's an obvious. That's too easy. What in particular can get us more scoring?
I really can't help but feel like the play calling on offense is just way too conservative. It's just they're so afraid of making a mistake that they make mistakes. I can't tell you how many times you turn and you see Darian Durant turn immediately to his right or left and throw sideways. And then you can't help but wonder why we're only getting 2-3 yards per catch with these short, almost screen passes. It's frustrating because you see every other quarterback in the league, they're just slinging the ball down the field like it's nothing. They're threading needles, connecting with their receivers. Darian Durant's supposed to be one of the premier quarterbacks in the Canadian Football League, and he's just looked average at best. Mm. And again, that's not I know it sounds like a knock on Darian, and I'm not trying to do that, but it baffles me that a quarterback that we know can be so great is having such a hard time moving the ball down the field. And what's even more frustrating is we've got this absolutely incredible dynamo of an offensive weapon in Tyrell Sutton. and he's barely being used. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out why it's so hard for this football team to stay with the run. Or by the time they start using the run, it's almost too late. I mean, big difference between the first half and the second half against both Edmonton and against BC was the lack of the run being used.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you start handing the ball off to Sutton and he's getting first down after first down. And then last week he actually managed to score a touchdown. I mean, it's incredible to me that why wouldn't you use your workhorse running back just to pound away and pound away, especially when you know you're just not getting the coverage that you're looking for. You're not getting the looks down the field. I get that. You don't want to just throw the ball, which unfortunately Durant was doing towards the end of the game, which kind of killed the Alouettes, throwing the ball to opposing defenders.
And we'll get to that. But it's
Again, at the end of the day, though, it really just comes down to I find the play calling very – I've said before it was suspect, and now it just seems even more baffling now just because we've got all this talent on paper, and for some reason it just doesn't seem to want to click. And again, does that come down to the coaches, does it come down to the players, or is it the plays? It's one of those things that, again, I guess unless you're actually in the trenches and you're seeing what Darian's seeing – I guess we can speculate all we want. We're all armchair quarterbacks, of course.
But this game was a back and forth game itself. So it's, as you mentioned before, him throwing the interception. The two things I think that really killed itself was the interception, and the interception to me didn't make any sense whatsoever on why it was thrown. It kind of reminded me, not really, but sort of like the interception that he threw versus the Alouettes in the Grey Cup the second time that they played, basically trying to get rid of the ball, but not throwing it far enough. And then what killed them also was wasn't it a penalty that stopped that BC had been stopped? Is that what it was? BC had been stopped. They're about to punt, but there was a penalty that gave BC the first down, and BC was summarily able to run out the clock because the Owls were going to get the ball back with about 45 seconds or so left. I think that's what it was.
Yep. And also, for the second week in a row, too many men on the field.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Unacceptable. I'm sorry. It's ridiculous. I know we got a little bit of Rough Rider blood in the system right now, but my God, we cannot have this. They always say once is a mistake, twice is a choice. So now you've done this two times in a row. It's got to stop. Like,
what does it make three times? Stupidity.
Oh well, you said it. I didn't. But okay. I again, these are the kind of things that you have to look squarely at the coaching staff and say, what the hell are you doing? What is going on at practice? Are you not covering these things? Are you not? What are you doing as far as discipline goes? Because right now, Montreal is sorely lacking in discipline in a lot of areas. I do feel like a lot of the penalties that are called can be a little ticky-tack at times. But again, you know the referees are going to be watching you. And if they have a chance to throw the flag, they certainly will.
Yeah.
So why draw the attention to yourself? And this is – I don't know if this is just because the team is still sort of gelling, is still trying to find its way, or is it really just a matter of no discipline whatsoever from the coaching staff? Like they're just letting players sort of go about their business and hope that it all works out. I mean, it's – again, perhaps we were spoiled in the Trestman era because there wasn't too many stupid penalties there. There was penalties. Don't get me wrong. There were players that acted out. There were players that did selfish things. But it just seems so few and far between, whereas nowadays we're seeing it a lot more frequently. And I tell you, it's really not a good look. It really doesn't bode well for Jacques Chapdelaine as a coach and the staff that he's put together. It doesn't really bode very well for Kavis Reid because he's the one who brought in a lot of these players to try and make this his team. And I get all of that. But at the same time, where do we go from here as far as discipline goes? Because penalties like this, like, are simply unacceptable. They kill drives. And if you're killing drives, then why even bother show up and play? It's frustrating.
It is. And the defense is actually, as I mentioned before, the defense is absolutely – the O-line is doing an amazing job.
Wow. Night and day difference.
I know. I'm waiting to find out the stats, if I can, from CFL statistician Steve Daniel to try to find out when the last time there was a team that started the season, the first three games, not giving up a sack. They will be available in the stats the stat books that come out over the next couple of days from the CFL, but we don't currently have it in front of us. I was trying to get the information while we were here. But once I do get it, I'll let you know. But Cliffy, above and beyond, they're doing everything right. The only bad thing on offense, as we're seeing, is that, well, no, they can't score. They've not scored over 20 points yet this year. It's usually one touchdown and then field goal, field goal, field goal. Field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal. You see the pattern.
Yeah, leaving points on the board, by the way, was very much a Trestman thing. I can't tell you how many times I remember seeing some great drives and you get so close. You're in the red zone and you're so close to scoring, and then just either it's butterfingers or the run gets stuffed and then you have no choice but to line up and go for three. And these past two games, I've been seeing way too much of that. And I'm so disappointed in you take a look at certain drives and you figure, okay, if that field goal could have just easily been a touchdown, that would have made all the difference.
No, it's true. And as we're saying, we know we're very frustrated. I mean, but the team, the funny thing is, the East is weird again this year. Actually, it's completely weird. The Owls are 1-2, but yet they're still second place in the East.
Yeah, I mean, if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, we'd be hosting Ottawa in a playoff game.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's early, but one thing I was thinking, we're looking at, and the West is always known to be very strong, and they usually knock each other off. It makes me wonder, because right now with the Owls, 1-2 versus the West so far, makes me wonder if what is basically going to do will be, I think the East will be won this year by playing the East. And I'm sure a lot of you are saying, well, duh, Tim, that's usually the way that it can be. But no, not necessarily, because, you know, the eight games between the Western Division can make or break you in your own division. But I was just thinking that the way that the East is this year, just look at it alone. You know, Toronto's barely in first place. And you have, I think it's winless Hamilton and once tied Ottawa, right?
Right. But don't tell the power rankings people that. I mean, they still think Ottawa is the cat's meow.
Now, or the baby girl, or the baby girl popcorn. So they've done well. The O-line is doing what they need to do. The defense is doing what they need to do. But as you said, you have eight penalties, 109 yards. Some of them coming at the most inopportune time. You know, Durant doesn't look bad, but it makes me wonder, and this is what I usually, and please, if anybody around football, if you know this better than I do, let me know. If I'm not mistaken, usually anywhere between the first 10 to 15 plays are scripted based on, unless they change it based on the situation.
That's always been my understanding of it. And that kind of leads into something else that I can't help but notice as well.
What's that?
Both games, both losses, both Edmonton and BC made halftime adjustments. I have not seen, other than starting to hand the ball off a little bit more to Sutton, I have not seen any major adjustments from the Alouettes coaching staff at halftime. It still feels like the same game is being played. And I still think that they think that their opponents are still going to play the same game. And they're not. And then you wonder why this team is falling apart in the fourth quarter. It's because there's changes that are being made. And I don't understand why this team can't seem to adjust to their opponents. It's one of those things that I can't help but shake my head to. I say this, of course, because, you know, I'm just the guy in the stands, right? So like 20,000 of us, or sorry, this past game, 18,000 of us. Oh gosh, that's terrible. But at the same time, with all that in mind, I just don't understand how you can't game plan for your opponent changing things up. You always seem to be caught flat-footed, and it's, like I said, it's very disheartening to see it. And I don't blame fans for wanting to leave with 8 minutes left in the game, because the CFL prides itself on no lead is safe and everything can change in seconds. And it's true, because Montreal and BC, once one would score, the other would reply. And right. It was kind of a chess match back and forth. But you just also got the feeling, especially too, once Jonathan Jennings got going for BC, I knew he was going to be unstoppable. And that fourth quarter, he pretty well was. Like, he had the Alouettes right in the palm of his hand. And let me tell you, there's just nothing you could do. Sitting in the stands watching this, you could almost telegraph the exact moments when this game was just slipping once again through the fingers of the Alouettes.
Yeah. Something has to be done. And obviously it's very tough with them playing Calgary this week. But it just seems that these teams are beatable. And we'll talk about the game a little bit more because there's more to talk about, obviously, with the CFL. But, yeah, we're hoping that the Alouettes can get things going and let's get a win at home because, you know, there is a lot at stake. There is a lot at stake. So, again, as I said, we'll talk about that as the show goes on. So the game ball this week, you know, there's not much more that we can give. I mean, we can go to the obvious and go to Bede again based on the field goals that he's kicked and whatnot. But who would you give the game ball to?
Well, and we could have easily gone with Bede again, especially after draining that 51-yard field goal.
Yeah, maybe it was money.
Right down Main Street, as Rod Black likes to say. But the Alouettes flight deck game ball definitely has to go to Tyrell Sutton.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, he didn't get that many rushes this week, but he had a 6-yard average per rush. He got a touchdown, the touchdown. And yeah, giving him the game ball seems to be the best thing. It seems to be the right thing to do. I just want to have a week where we have a problem in not knowing who we can choose because so many players have done so much in a particular game.
Well, and we'll get there. I have every confidence in the world that Montreal will get it figured out, get it sorted out, and get back on track. We still have to remember there's still another 15 games to go in this football season. It's a slog. It's a marathon. And yeah, it's frustrating, but look at it this way. Hamilton's 0-2. Saskatchewan just got their first win of the season, finally. Things don't look fantastic. And, of course, we're always going to be the butt end of jokes because of all sorts of reasons. But yeah. At the end of the day, like I said, a couple bounces here and there, this team could easily be 3-0 and be the class of the Eastern Division. Or they could be 0-3 and, you know, continue to still be a laughingstock. So that's football for you, though, folks. Like I said, I wish there was an easy answer to it all, but at the end of the day, it just comes down to the team has to perform better in certain areas. They know what they have to do. I have every faith in the world that they're going to get this sorted out. They're going to get it figured out, and we're going to be smiling again.
Looking for something different from your snacks? Grab a bag of Bad Monkey Popcorn. Bad Monkey Popcorn is produced locally in Montreal in a number of mouth-watering flavors that will have your taste buds wanting more after just one kernel. Now available throughout Quebec in most major grocery stores, independent outlets, and selected cities across Canada. For more information, head to badmonkeypopcorn.com. Something that we have had to live with before in the past, because something very similar happened in a way. The Tiger Cats' Will Hill was actually suspended. And fined, actually, but it's more or less the suspension that we're going to be talking about here for roughing up a ref, literally putting his hands on the ref. You know, it's basically one of those things where you grab him by the collar and he goes, "Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? You can't be talking to me because I'm talking to you," type of thing. Uh-huh. So what's your take on this? And obviously what I was mentioning before was the infamous Daron Carter situation. You know, we've had issues where players bumping into head coaches bumping players. He only got one game. Now, one thing, by the way, from what I understand, and I read on the Twitter, is that when a player is suspended for more than one game, then that's when the PA can actually, you know, decide to go to arbitration and try to lower the amount of games that it is.
Right.
What's your thought on him only getting one game?
To be honest with you, I thought he was going to get two games, but I think they it's kind of a tough call, especially for the new commissioner, because this is actually his first sort of big decision that he has to make.
Yeah, I know. For less than a week in, and he's already making this decision.
Yeah. I mean, talk about a great initiation for you for taking over this highly touted position.
It's not the type of hazing that I thought he was going to be put towards him.
Some
initiative.
No, and Randy Ambrosi too, let's not forget, also was part of the Players Association after his playing career was over. So he kind of knows where it's coming from both sides. So I have a feeling that the way this fine and suspension was handed out was with the understanding that if you were to give more, then that would just give more leverage to the Players Association to try and just come back and say, hey, this is way too much. You gotta dial it down a little bit. I think a precedent had to be set for sure. I mean, it has to be made very clear. You cannot put your hands on an official. I don't care who you are. It's completely unacceptable. That's the league stance on it. I'm 100% behind the league on that. Let's not forget, too, Hamilton coach Kent Austin also got in trouble for inadvertently slapping an official as well. Mm-hmm. And again, like, there's also some circumstances behind that as well, but he also too felt the wrath of the league. So all in all, I'd say the punishment was just about right. I mean, I've seen some people wanting Will Hill being suspended for the entire season, which would be absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, but they were also calling for Carter's head on also when he did it, the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, Duran didn't put his hands on any official. He just bumped into the coach. Although I think the coach kind of bumped into him.
Embellishment.
Yeah.
Now, it makes you wonder, based on what happened with the Carter situation, did the CFL decide to only give him a single game based on the fact that it took them, what, an extra 4 weeks to decide for him to go to arbitration for whatever the reasoning was? And they allowed him to play up until that point, and then he was suspended summarily up against Ottawa the next time they played each other. Do you think, just because it was the very first game for Ambrosi, that they decided, you know what, let's just give him one game? Because even Ambrosi has mentioned that this has to be changed on how the system works. Mentioned today on social media.
Yeah. No, that's something they did talk about with him, is that he wants to set a precedent, but at the same time, take a look at the underlying factors that go behind making these kind of decisions, as far as what's been done in the past when referees have gotten into altercations with players, and how do we, one, curb that sort of behavior and prevent it entirely, and any sort of subsequent actions at that point. So, like I said, I think a lot of the thought behind just one game plus a fine is to still send a message, to still make it very clear that this sort of behavior will not be tolerated by the Canadian Football League at all. But I think also, too, this also gives an opportunity for him to go back to the Players Association and say, listen, this is not a widespread problem. This is not something that happens frequently. But at the same time, when these things come up, we want to make sure that we're all on the same page here, like, so that you can explain to your players, to your members, that if you were to put your hands on an official for any reason, these are the consequences that are going to follow, and make sure that everybody understands what's going to happen should an event like this happen again in the future. So I think it's kind of like a learning experience as well, not just for Ambrosi, but also for the league in general, like for the players, for the Players Association, and for everybody associated with the Canadian Football League, to sort of learn from incidents like this and see where you can go going forward in the future. No. So I think at the end of the day, that's how you got to sort of chalk it up, is a lot of people, I'm sure, are very upset that, you know, they felt that maybe Hill should have gotten a lot more to really teach him a lesson. But let's not forget, too, missing one football game in the CFL is like missing 8 NHL games. And his pocketbook is taking a bit of a hit. Let's not forget, these guys are not multimillionaires. So a substantial, like a game check essentially disappearing, players are going to notice that.
And also, there are official suspensions, and then there are the unofficial suspensions. So who's to say that Tiger Cats head coach Kent Austin is not going to bench him for a quarter, for a half? Who's to say? And that may not. And that is leading up to, and maybe after, the suspension, just to get the point across. I've seen, you and I have seen it done many a time. You know, for some reason, one of your star players does not start, and then he happens to show up all of a sudden in the second quarter. You're thinking, okay, I see what's going on here. It's basically to get the point across to him. You know, not necessarily monetarily, but just to say, don't screw up again.
Absolutely. Like I said, this is a learning experience for everybody. For Will Hill, for the Tiger Cats, for the Canadian Football League, for the referees, for everybody.
True. I know we talked about Ambrosi a little bit last week, but you know, before he was actually brought in. But what overall, what's your first impressions of him? And obviously, by the way, we do hope to have him get him on the podcast as soon as possible.
Uh-huh. Well, like I said, I think being a former player and being a former member of the Players Association, Brain Trust, I think these are all things that are just going to help make things a lot more relatable to the game itself and how he is going to approach things. I think he's going to come at things from a player's perspective. He's going to come at things from a league perspective, come at things from an association perspective. Like I said, he's going to have a great viewpoint of everything. Like when you come to him with a problem, I have a feeling he's going to take a look at it and he'll understand where that person is coming from.
Right.
And that's going to be huge, as opposed to someone who's never played at the game, never truly been invested in the league itself. I think that's going to make a huge difference going forward. And I have to say, I'm encouraged by everything he's saying so far. Obviously he's saying, you know, he's going to say the right things and all that stuff. And this first test of his, again, it's still too early to tell just how big of an effect that's going to have on the league going forward, but he's certainly saying the right things as far as wanting to make the positive changes and to help grow the game. And at the end of the day, that's all we want as supporters, fans, whatever you want to call yourselves, of the Canadian Football League. At the end of the day, we just want this product to be better and to get better. And I have to say, with him in charge, I definitely feel encouraged by everything that's been going on. And I'm very excited to see where it's going to go forward and over the next coming weeks, months, years, what have you. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what's going to happen now.
I think it's very interesting. And I do frequent some of the other football message boards, whether it be Arena League football or indoor football or that type of thing. I've seen a lot of people are actually very intrigued to actually have a commissioner who is, as you said, who was on both sides of the ball and is now was hired as to be the commissioner of the Canadian Football League. I'm interested to see, and it's going with my thought process of some of the questions that I'm going to ask him when we do get him on the show. But I would hope that if you're able to get somebody who is as good as, you know, good in business, been on both sides of the ball, player, PA, etc., maybe more leagues will look into it more. You know, I'm sure, you know, even though the fans love to do it, you know, do we always need somebody in the NHL like Gary Bettman, where everybody boos him all the time? You know, I think one of the few things too that will be interesting is when, because I know it's been a while, we have a couple more years yet, but when the new CBA has to be negotiated, how much of an influence will he have on either side of the ball, so to speak?
I think it'll definitely make for an interesting discussion, to say the least. I think this is going to be a big part of him that completely understands why players want certain concessions. And at the end of the day, he also has to answer to 9 particular members of the Board of Governors. So he's representing them. So it's all about finding that balance, all about finding a happy medium where everybody is respected and everyone's concerns are addressed, and just finding a way to create that harmony. And again, the fact that he's been down that road for the players, not just for himself, but also for his teammates as a representative and also working within the Players Association office as well. He knows what to expect. Like when it comes time for them to negotiate the new CBA, he'll have a fairly good idea of what the players are more than likely going to be asking for, not just more money or benefits or what have you. It's going to be an opportunity for him to help sell the idea of growing this league. That's got to be his approach to this. Like his job essentially is to grow the Canadian Football League and keep it growing. This league has taken so many steps forward, and the last thing you'd want to see is it being knocked back because, well, we used to do things like this back in the day. And that's always a fear, I guess, when you have some of these former players in charge,
right,
is that they get into that mindset of, well, back in the day we did this and it worked for us. I'm like, well, what worked in 1960, 1970, 1980 isn't necessarily going to work in 2017, 2018, or 2020, I believe is when the CBA is expired. So he's got to be able to understand what the players are looking at, what they need to perform and give their best possible, the best possible version of themselves that they can to help grow this game. And he's got to be able to help provide the tools to help grow this game from an owner's perspective, from an administrative perspective. So that's going to be the real test when that time comes. So I know it's still early. I mean, he's really, truly only just took office a couple of days ago, officially.
Right.
So he's definitely got a lot on his plate. One thing I did hear that I liked in one of the interviews he's done is he kind of wants to take a team-by-team approach to everybody, see what's going on, really take a look at the issues that each particular team is having, address them, and see how he can help make things better. So when we do get a chance to talk with him, I'm really curious to see what he feels are the big issues in Montreal. And not that we expect a plan right away, but I'd be curious to see from a league perspective what he thinks the issues are in Montreal versus what we, the fans, feel are the issues or the important things. Because we can list a whole bunch of things that we'd like to see as sure. as far as how we want the Alouettes to grow and present themselves on and off the field. So it'd be kind of neat to get that perspective as well and see if he had complete and total free reign, what he would do to help make the Alouettes great again. Because you and I, we have our theories of what we'd like to see. Mm-hmm. Ask any fan. Lord knows they've got thousands and thousands of theories of what the team should be doing to make, in their opinion, things a lot better. So I'd be curious to see from a league perspective and from someone who's overseeing the entire Canadian Football League, not just the Alouettes, but the entire league itself. I'm curious to see what kind of perspective he would be bringing, how he looks at things as an outsider, so to speak. How does he see the Montreal Alouettes, and what changes would he like to see in order for the Alouettes to become an even stronger franchise than what they are now?
Interesting perspective. Write that down. Don't forget it.
Well, you're recording this, aren't you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, good. So help me God, Tim, if you did not hit record, I am going to throttle you.
No. It's recording. I promise you. So besides that, a couple more things where we're going to talk about the game that's coming up this week. As I mentioned before, the Alouettes had their season ticket holder Q&A session, whatever you want to call it, season ticket holder appreciation day or whatever it is. Second year in a row, unfortunately, had to be held over at the field house at Personal Molson. Even though, to be fair, the rain did hold off. It could have. I thought they could have had it outside, considering how freaking hot it was inside that field house.
Oh yeah, and let me tell you, normally that building is air conditioned. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm under the impression that yes, it is, because I've been in that field house many a time at McGill University.
Well, there you go. So I don't know why they couldn't put the AC on for us, but okay. Because, yeah, a lot of the players, too, could not believe just how humid it was. The weather didn't help the cause. There was crazy thunderstorms and all that going on before in the morning. But, yeah, the humidity was just absolutely – it was stifling, to be honest with you.
So what was your take on this? I mean, I've been to this thing, and you know, I want to take advantage of these things. You know, being a veteran, a season ticket holder that I am, you are more of the player guy than I am. To be fair, but I'm just there to see and take in the atmosphere and whatever freebies that they're going to be giving away and stuff like that, and you know, the perks on merchandise, et cetera, et cetera. What did you take away from this? I mean, I know in years past we've had it where it's been, you know, the head coach, the GM, and maybe a couple of players will be up there and take a couple of questions from the fans. This year it was, you know, it was Kavis Reid and Coach Chapdelaine who just took questions from Bruno Appel. What did you take away from this? I mean, I thought some of these things were good. They were, you know, Coach Chapdelaine is very well spoken, knows what he wants to say and how he wants to get it across. From Kavis Reid and him trying to speak French, which I think was a huge plus, just to show that he is making an effort, at least starting to make an effort to speak French in Quebec. You know, that's what I took away from that. I mean, for you, what did you particular take away from it?
Well, just like you, I find it very impressive that both coaches were able to address all of the fans in both French and English, which I thought you have to do it. I'm sorry. There's a lot. There's still that general consensus that the Alouettes are the French team, so you can only do everything in French. So that's I find this a really a mind blowing thing for a lot of people in the rest of Canada. Like people are just shocked that it's all in English. Like, well, yeah, of course it's all in English. All the players speak English. Mm-hmm. Again, like you said, Coach Chapdelaine is extremely well spoken. You can tell he's a very cerebral man. He does put a lot of thought into things. Which, again, kind of leads back to why it's so frustrating that the play calling makes little to no sense. Because I know he's a very intelligent man. And some of the plays that are being called don't strike me as very intelligent. But again, there's a method to his madness. And he did touch on that a little bit during the Q&A session, explaining why – because the fans were asking too, why are you doing this play? Why are you doing it? It was great because – it shows that the fans are engaged. I don't care whether you're speaking French, English, Italian, no matter what, football in and of itself is a universal language. And don't think that the coaching staff doesn't know that, because Chapdelaine right away, I think he was almost taken by surprise a little bit, because these were not just like little fanboy questions. Like these were questions from fans who watch these games and are frustrated too. Like it's one thing for the coaching staff to be frustrated with the outcome of the football games. That's to be expected.
Right.
Fans, they're allowed to be angry too. They're allowed to be pissed off. And they're allowed to question why are certain calls being made. And the fact that these fans came up to the podium, stated their piece, and said, can you please explain why XYZ happened instead of 1, 2, 3? And to his credit, Jacques Chapdelaine did explain why certain plays were being called. It's all about finding that chemistry. It's all about finding – it's also a lot of respect as well that opposing teams have for players like Darian Durant and for our defense. And just I don't want to say that Coach Chapdelaine is out-coaching himself, because I initially thought that – I sort of touched on that a little bit in the alternative. I really felt that Coach Chapdelaine was sort of overthinking things. But maybe it really just comes down to the other teams really know what to expect from us, in the sense that we're going to be bringing a lot of potential firepower. So they've got a game plan just as hard to counter that. And so far they've been doing a pretty good job, because Montreal for the most part has been neutralized as far as putting points on the board.
Right.
But I think that just speaks to just how much preparation goes in on both sides of the football field, not just for the Alouettes, but also for their opponents as well. So when Coach Chapdelaine explained that, it definitely made a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people came away from the event with a new appreciation of how this isn't easy. This is not easy, the Canadian Football League. A lot of people think, well, why don't you just throw it downfield? Or why don't you just do this and that? I'm like, well, sometimes it doesn't work that way. And things could end up being worse as a result. And I think that's what Chapdelaine was trying to get across to a lot of the fans, is that, trust us, we're frustrated too. We don't want to be in this position any more than you folks want to be in this position. It's just a matter of, it's going to take time, but it's going to work. We'll see how things go after the next couple of games, but they're very encouraged with what they've seen so far, all things considered. I know it sounds hard to believe, folks, but...
Yeah, 1-2. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, and it's funny. You usually hear that type of thing and you would roll your eyes, but I didn't actually roll my eyes, so...
No eye rolling.
Again,
I mean, yeah, if you were to read that in print, you would certainly roll your eyes like, oh, of course, but the way that was explained, and I kind of wish there was like video of this being made, or there was a live stream so that other fans could sort of really take it in and really understand what Chapdelaine was trying to get across to everybody. And really, truly, all it comes down to, I know it sounds like a platitude, but you got to trust the process. It was not easy for Kavis Reid to let certain players go and sign elsewhere or trade them away. And I know it's frustrating, especially when you see SJ Green having an absolutely phenomenal season so far with the Toronto Argonauts.
He had a career day last week.
Yeah, it hurts, because we love SJ Green. SJ Green was the Alouettes. To see him in double blue is disappointing. There's absolutely no question about that. To see him have monster games with Ricky Ray throwing to him, that stings as well. There's no other ways around it. But you have to believe that when it's all said and done, yeah, SJ Green could have an absolutely phenomenal 2017 season. And who knows? Maybe the Toronto Argonauts do go all the way and end up in the Grey Cup. Yeah. Anything could happen.
Anything could happen. And one last thing I want to talk about this actual thing is a very interesting question came from first two things. A young fan asked about football, and Kavis Reid basically, I think it was Kavis Reid, or was it Coach Chapdelaine, who basically said, you know, stay in football, continue with what you love. and got a lot of props from the fans that were there. The other one that I think I was very impressed with was a fan who got up there and asked them, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, Cliff, because I'm paraphrasing, do you pray before or after the games? And mm-hmm. it was a very interesting answer that came from Coach Chapdelaine. It was really that, we might, or we do pray, but I guess I say paraphrasing, we're one team. It doesn't matter who you pray to, we're just all one team. And the way that he said it really impressed me, because it makes you wonder what if another head coach would have just blown the question off or whatnot. I don't know, but it's I was very impressed with how he came across with that particular question.
Mm-hmm. And you get to see more and more why it was so important for the LOS organization to retain Chapdelaine as a head coach, not just because the players love playing for him. He understands what it takes. He is definitely a player's coach. I see it in the interactions that he has with all of the players. He's there for them, and he wants to get the most out of his players. He wants to help bring them to that next level. You see it in the way he prepares. You see it in the way he does things, and I think it's really just a matter of when it comes to what we're seeing so far on the field, maybe it's not working the way we'd like it to. Like I said, in a perfect world, we'd be 3-0, and we'd be kicking everybody's ass up and down the street. It's not working out that way so far. It may not work out that way this season. It may never work out like that. But you have to respect the way that he puts everything together, the way he approaches not just game days, but also practices right. and anything else that has to do, all the responsibilities that come with being a head coach in the Canadian Football League. You can see that he's been training for this. He's been preparing for this for his entire life. And he's definitely making the most of that opportunity right now. And the fact that he's able to present himself in such a positive way, and again, in both French and English, he doesn't have to do that, but he's doing it, and he's doing it extremely well. And it's easy to say, well, the only reason the Alouettes are keeping him is because he can speak French. I think that helps tremendously. But at the end of the day, you want the best possible coach, and not just the guy who can put together the most wins or come up with the most amazing plays. All that stuff's going to come in time. But someone who truly, truly gets what it takes to be a coach in this league and to help make your players flourish and grow, I think that's got to be the most important quality above all else when it comes to selecting a head coach. And I will say that Jacques Chapdelaine definitely has that in spades.
Okay. And one last thing, and you mentioned a little bit before, attendance. The attendance for the game this past Thursday's game was 18,728. It was actually the lowest regular season attendance, Cliff, since the team drew 18,199 back in July, late July of 99. And I know some people can, and I'm one of them, who can be a little obsessive when it comes to this type of thing. And I was actually speaking with our season ticket rep, Serge, for the Alouettes. And he kind of put it in perspective, saying, you know what? Think of it this way. You have 18,728 people in the stands. You can't really think of it as how far away or what your total percentage is away from having a sellout. I think sometimes we just need to learn that it's going to be hard for the Owls to get sellouts once again, like we did back for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But still, it to me, and he made a lot. It made sense. But still, it's a little concerning. I mean, the Owls have played way too many Thursday games since the advent of the TSN contract. Way too many Thursday games since the Alouettes have returned. And a few of the fans were pointing out, they're saying, what about an off Saturday game? What about it's? I'm sure they are having to deal with being a tenant at McGill at Percival Molson. It is controlled by McGill University, the schedule, and TSN. Is it, as I said, do you think it is just a number that we have nothing to worry about, or it could be worse? And we brought that up. It could be worse. We could be Toronto.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to say it's a bit of both, really, because yes, you should be concerned, because this stadium, what it's filled, is absolutely phenomenal. It is rocking, and it gets loud. I'm not talking extremely loud. I'm not talking like NFL loud, because that's just a whole different level altogether, and I can't imagine any CFL team, short of now Saskatchewan and their new building, possibly reaching levels like that. But you know what? That's one thing I've always said about Montreal is you pack the stadium and people finally cheer properly on defense like they're supposed to, and you get everybody riled up, I tell you, there is no better place in the world than in that stadium. So when I see 18,000 fans showing up for a game, it's disheartening because you can make all sorts of excuses, but at the end of the day, it's summertime, people are on vacation, any number of things. There's no excuse. There's no good excuse as to why this stadium shouldn't be sold out. And it really comes down to Montrealers need to see wins. And if you're not providing them the wins, they're not going to invest. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that I blame them. This is a city that loves its winners. The Montreal Canadiens can get away with a couple of losing seasons. And if someone decides to give up their season tickets, well, there's a list of four or five people that'll gladly snap them up, no problem. The Alouettes don't have that luxury. And I wish there was a quick fix for it. And it's easy to blame the Thursday games. And again, I really hope this is an eye-opener for everybody so that they realize that, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be playing football on Thursdays, at least not every single Thursday. The fact that the Alouettes, 5 of their 9 home games are on Thursday night is insulting. There's absolutely no reason why we can't have a game on Saturday afternoon or more Friday night games. It's frustrating. I get it. And I know there's so many reasons behind why the Alouettes seem to be the redheaded stepchild when it comes to this particular discussion. I just wish it didn't have to be like this. And I don't know if it's, like you said, because the Alouettes are tenants of McGill University, or if they have to kowtow to TSN and what they want as far as how they're going to be broadcasting the football games. I don't have that answer, unfortunately. But I really, and for years I've always heard that, well, this is what the fans in Montreal want. Well, maybe not. Maybe fans don't want to spend Thursday night downtown Montreal when they could be going to any number of bars, restaurants, clubs, or getting ready for the weekend. Maybe, just maybe, Thursday night football isn't quite working for Montreal football or for Montreal Alouettes football.
Yeah.
And I really think someone somewhere has to really sit down and take a look at this and say, you know what? I guess it's not working. Maybe fans don't really want this after all. I know I don't want it. I know there's lots of fans, especially outside of Quebec, that live just outside of Montreal, trying to get into Montreal with the construction that's going on. Imagine if you're living out in like Quebec City or in Ottawa or Gatineau or any of these other places not too far from Montreal, and you want to go see the Alouettes play, and you can't because getting into the city is the term concrete jungle definitely applies to Montreal. With all the construction and rerouting and everything like that, just getting into Montreal itself is a nightmare. So you're taking away those fans right there. You think those fans are going to pay for season tickets just because, especially if the team's losing? Hell no. I don't blame them. I don't blame anyone who lives outside, who wants to be a fan of the Alouettes, but they're not going to make that commitment to buying season tickets. They're not going to make commitments. They're not going to change their whole lives around just to struggle to get into the city and then watch the Alouettes piss away a game for 3 hours.
Right.
I don't blame them. I'd be pissed off too. I wouldn't want to invest my hard-earned money in that.
No, I get it. I completely agree.
So really, I mean, like, this is a discussion we've had several times, but this notion, like, I understand everybody, really, truly, everybody should be playing Thursday night football. When was the last time the Saskatchewan Roughriders hosted Thursday night football?
I did the work on that a few years ago, and I think Saskatchewan was one of the ones. Both Saskatchewan and BC were the two teams that had the least amount of Thursday games at home.
Okay. And again, BC, I've been told from the folks over at the BC Lions podcast that it's a logistic nightmare, kind of like what we sort of experience in Montreal as far as the downtown core and all that stuff. So I get that. I can appreciate that part of things. But at the end of the day, like, it just really feels like Montreal seems to be getting the short end of the stick when it comes to the scheduling. And it really seems like, well, it's just Montreal. No one cares. Let's just stick them with the Thursday games and be done with it. Mm-hmm. And I really think we should be doing a lot better than that. I really don't see why we can't have what's going on at McGill University anyways on a Saturday afternoon. Like this coming Saturday, for example, what's going on there?
I don't have the McGill personal Molson thing in front of me, so I can't say.
Well, I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts right now. There's nothing going on. I'm willing to bet that if they really, truly wanted to, the Alouettes could play a game. Like the game that we're playing on Friday.
Yeah.
We could be playing that game on Saturday just as easily. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm of the opinion that a lot of these Thursday night games could just as easily be played on Saturday afternoon
right.
at 3 o'clock or even 1 o'clock or whatever. I don't see why we can't have Saturday games in total, whether it's Saturday night, Saturday afternoon. I don't care. It's not a school day. It's not a work day. You know, you don't have to get up at the crack of dawn on a Sunday morning unless you're going to church. But I don't see – I can't think of any one particular good reason why we can't have these games instead of on Thursday nights. But if you have to have one or two games, I'd be okay with that. But 5 out of 9, to me, that's unacceptable. And if you and you're sitting there wondering why you're only getting 18,000 at a game, well, there's your answer. Simple as that. I think people – they always say people vote with their wallets. Well, when 18,000 people struggled – you struggle to get 18,000 people in a stadium that holds at the moment 23,500, I believe it is. That's quick math, 3,500 fans that decided, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm not spending X number of dollars and 3 hours of my time when I could just as easily, if I really want to see the game, I'll just sit at home and watch it on my HDTV, or I'll go to a bar where it's a lot more sociable and a lot more exciting and watch the game there. I'm not going to make that slug all the way into downtown, fight the traffic, fight the construction, fight everything for a Thursday night game. It's to me, it's not worth it. Like, I'm sure that's how a lot of fans feel. And like I said, the diehard fans are going to be there, win, lose, or draw. That's great. You don't have to sell to them. It's these casual fans that you want to try and get hooked onto the CFL. And I'm sorry, but these Thursday night games are simply not doing it.
Okay, just now, as you've been venting, I went ahead and looked it up. Alouettes game days are usually an all-day affair, which makes sense. So they basically have the entire stadium to themselves for the entire, day, starting from 6 a.m. So that's what they have for this current coming up day on Friday. All the days prior, there's sports camp from 8 to 5:30 p.m. on Saturday alone. This is just how it, and we don't know how we don't. And you, Cliff, you work in we both work in the corporate world where things can be scheduled immediately, and sometimes obviously things that have more precedence. There's only two things going on at Molson on the Saturday, and it's called QSF Soccer, and one's between 9:30 and 12 and 5:30 and 7. So it makes me wonder. I'd have to go back and check future dates, but it looks like that they do have things that are scheduled, but it just depends on what. Because I know McGill is known for their sports camp. So,
And I'm not taking anything away from that. Right. I completely get it, and I can appreciate it just as much as the next person.
I'm sure it's money too. It's money also, I'm sure.
But is it like the kind of money that a full stadium and a full football game would generate? That's what I'd like to know. Is it a much more profitable venture for McGill to have an Alouettes, like a fully packed stadium, watching a football game, spending money on tickets, merch, parking, what have you? Or do you generate more money from these other events that you're talking about?
It's a good question. And obviously the sports camp's the thing. The sports camp is done by McGill itself. People have already paid for this type of thing. So, as I said, I'm just looking at it here, and there is sports camp, and it is ultimate frisbee on certain days of the week. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe another Sunday game. Maybe a Sunday game, but it usually doesn't happen until have one before Labor Day, because we're kind of getting screwed out of a Sunday game this year. So I don't know. Obviously, there are other variables, but we obviously let's move on. But it's something that. They, you know, they do all these surveys and stuff, and they say, oh, well, Thursdays are the games. I'm thinking, I don't believe you.
And you know what? I'll tell you what. If anyone from the Alouettes front office is listening to this, or from McGill's front office is listening to this and can shed some light on this, please, please get in touch with us, because if there's a great reason for this, I'm all ears. Help us understand if there's a real true reason of why this is being done like this. Help us understand so we can help the fans understand, so everybody can understand what the thought process is, because we only look at the things that we see in front of us, right? Mm-hmm. And all I see is 18,000 people watched the game, and that's disheartening, especially when you know bloody well that the stadium could be packed to the gills with football fans. And they're out there. There's a lot of football fans in Quebec. I think the inroads that have been made over the past 20 years since the Alouettes came back, I think that this sport has grown exponentially in the province of Quebec. As far as I'm concerned, there is no good reason why that stadium should not be filled every single game other than the fact that these games are on Thursdays. So if anyone out there from the admin, from either McGill or the Alouettes, can come on to our show and give us a proper explanation as to why there are so many freaking Thursday games, we'd be more than happy to have you, more than happy to engage this debate with you and help us understand. I guess that's the best way to describe it would be to help us understand why things are the way they are. Because otherwise, all we can see is those empty seats, and all we can see is fans that just become disinterested, especially when the team isn't winning. I mean, winning cures everything. That's known far and wide.
Yeah.
So, again, consider this an open invitation to anyone that can explain to us why there are so many Thursday games and why you're so convinced that it's going to work. Because speaking just from a podcasting perspective, just from a fan's perspective, however you want to phrase it, I don't believe it's working. And I don't think it's ever going to truly work the way that they would like it to. Hey, folks, we appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, alouettespodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
Tough game this week on Friday versus the Calgary Stampeders. What's interesting to see, by the way, Cliff, is that Tyrell Sutton, even though he is getting less touches, he's actually still leading the league in rushing yards. And what's funny is after 3 weeks, he's leading the CFL with only 210 yards. Mm-hmm. There's only been 100-yard game this year, and that was by White in Edmonton. Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't be any surprise, though, just how well Tyrell Sutton's playing, because I've been saying for years that this is one of the premier backs in the CFL. Mm-hmm. And now people are finally starting to really, truly notice and appreciate it. I think we've always appreciated him in Montreal. Even when he's been derailed by injuries, you can tell his passion is there. You can tell that this is a guy that just doesn't stop working. And how can you not be excited at the prospect of this guy potentially leading the league again in rushes? Don't forget, 2015, he was the league leader. He did end up leading the league in rushing for the season. And if he keeps going at this pace, he's going to hit another 1,000 yards relatively easy. And this is all too, in spite of the fact that he's really not getting that many touches.
I know.
So I'm really hoping that if Jacques Chaplin is the cerebral gamesman that I sort of made him out to be a little bit earlier, I really hope that he truly finds a way to get the ball in Sutton's hands a lot more, because when you put the ball in his hands, more often than not, he gets first downs. He gets touchdowns.
What's funny, he's actually third in the league in carries, which I did not know. Best in the league in average yards per rush.
So again, this just comes back to what I've been talking about, is that this is a viable threat on offense.
Right.
And yet we see Darian Durant just throw these hitches to nowhere, or gets picked off. And every once in a while, he will connect with BJ Cunningham or Tyquan Underwood, and that's all well and good. But you gotta vary up the offense a little bit, as far as I'm concerned. And I think the best way to do it, the safest way to do it too, really, is put the ball in Tyrell Sutton's hands, and he'll let him churn away, and let him, you know, just that workhorse, let him chip away at the defensive line and just get those 8, 9, 10-yard rushes in.
Yeah.
He'll break them down. And you just got to keep at it and keep at it. And when they finally get it figured out, like, hey, they're going to keep giving the ball to Sutton, that's when you try to catch him napping with a quick pass.
Exactly. So Bo Levi is fourth in the league when it comes to total yards passing. 6 TDs, 2 interceptions. Durant himself is 3 TDs and 2 interceptions. What do the Owls need to do in order to knock off Calgary? Now, the Owls have done very well at home versus Calgary. They have won the last 5 out of 7 at home, including 3 in a row. Once again, this will be most likely with Durant starting. This is going to be the 5th different quarterback making a start versus Calgary at home.
Mm-hmm.
5th different quarterback.
No, and let's not forget, Bo Levi Mitchell only has, I believe, 7 regular season losses in his career as a starter in the CFL. Let's not forget, one of those losses is against the Alouettes at home. It did happen 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that it's impossible, but one thing that Montreal is going to have to do is take advantage of both the injuries that have been happening to both the offensive and defensive line for Calgary. Again, this is where you have a Tyrell Sutton. This is why you have deep threats like Ernest Jackson and BJ Cunningham. This is why I'm saying you have to open up the game. You got to take advantage of these injuries and just pound them. Like, Calgary is obviously not going to be expecting Montreal to do much because they probably haven't seen a whole lot from them. I'm really hoping and praying that we just see as much offense as possible for Montreal. You got to take chances. You got to really, really open things up. Stop playing conservative. Conservative gets you killed.
Yeah, throw the ball. They got to start going down the field. If any of you betting fans out there, the Alouettes are a 5.5-point underdog with an over-under of 49 points. 49, I found that to be a little low. I really did, but they usually are pretty spot on for the CFL.
When you've got like one team that's, like you said, hasn't even scored 20 points yet this season, it's certainly understandable why there's not a lot of love in the points department when it comes to any game involving Montreal.
Exactly.
But I think what's going to be key for Montreal is, no one's giving them a chance in hell. I think even the most hardcore Alouettes fan is going to be hard pressed to think of a way that Montreal even be able to hang with Calgary. Let's not forget, Calgary is the defending Western champion, and they're undefeated still this season. Not perfect, but undefeated. So yeah. I'd be stunned, quite frankly, if Montreal were able to hand Calgary their first loss of the season. But maybe with history on their side, anything's possible. I just think there are times where Bo Levi Mitchell does look human. If Montreal can capitalize on those, and again, even with the hits that our defense has taken over the past couple of weeks, if it can come together and you've got veterans, like I said, like Ryan Phillips, Brandon Stewart, who may be making his debut with Montreal this coming Friday. If these are the guys that should know how to get to a quarterback and be able to impart that wisdom onto the young guys and just attack. You've got to really bring everything against Calgary because they are just so, so dangerous. And if Montreal can just find a way to neutralize as well DeVaris Daniels, it's going to help tremendously because Bo's one of his favorite targets along with Marque McDaniel. Got to find a way to just keep those guys honest, keep them in check, and just force Calgary to make them think, make them keep them on their heels, really. I think that's going to be key. If Montreal can do that, they can hang with – they've proven they can hang with the best teams in this league. I mean, they played very well, all things considered, against Edmonton. BC, that could have gone – that match really, truly could have gone either way until the end of the – like towards the end of the fourth. Calgary, I know on paper this match doesn't look like a fair fight, but you never know, right? Once the games are played – you never know what's going to happen. And I think that's what makes this such an exciting time. This is what makes it such an exciting game.
Right.
Is that really, truly anything could happen. Now, I say this and maybe the Alouettes just fall flat on their face again. That could happen too, unfortunately. But let's see what this week of practice brings. Let's see what kind of strategy Jacques Chapdelaine and the rest of his coaching staff have for a real, real test in the Calgary Stampeders.
Yeah, should be an interesting game, and hopefully it will be a good one. Just want to see some points up on the board, so I think it's all that matters. So don't forget, next week, once again, we will have the spinning of the wheel, and we will be having our second flavor of Bad Monkey Popcorn. Gotta get it here. So Baby Girl Popcorn was the one this week, Pink Cherry. Thanks again to Bad Monkey for being our presenting sponsor. And Cliff, are you sitting next to me on Friday? I can't remember.
I'll be there. Of course you know I'm going to be there.
Yeah, but I mean, same section.
Well, what can I say? I always say there's no bad seat in the house when it comes to principal sustainability. So it's always kind of nice to me sort of get out of the comfort zone and take a look and see perspectives from other games as well, the other seats as well. So. But no, like I said, I've always said that there's no section like Y1. I mean, you talk about like great fans that really know the game, that really understand things, ourselves included. I'm kind of patting my back here and your back as well on this. But absolutely a blast to be sitting in. But like I said, there really is no bad seat in the stadium. So I really hope, especially with it being a Friday night game, you know, the weekend's the weekend's just getting underway and everything like that. I really hope to see a lot more than 18,000 fans in the seats.
Cool, cool. All right, well, I will see you with the game. For sure, for sure, for sure. And anybody else out there who listens to the podcast and can be near us, you know, shoot us over something on Twitter and come on by. We'll be more than happy to say hello. So for everybody here at the Alouettes Flight Deck for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.